This episode of Fireside Chat is brought to you by TickTix. Buying tickets shouldn't be anonymous. We are built for fans, by fans. Available on Android and iOS. Are you ready? Sea of Red, it's time for another Fireside Chat, the official podcast of Flames fans. It's go time.
Here we are on January 23rd, back for another Fireside Chat. And Matt, before we get into anything else, I guess the big question of the week is, what the heck has happened to this Flames team?
Oh, you're starting to see when a team that has very little forward depth, having the handful of players that are good, struggle. And guys like Versteeg and Brouwer, the secondary players that are supposed to support the Monahans and the Goudreaus, they're kind of struggling a bit, and the Flames just don't have enough depth to handle those guys struggling, in addition to guys like Goudreau struggling. And it does not take very much for the team to look completely lost out there.
It's interesting because it's almost the opposite of last year. Last year, the goalies looked completely useless. The star players were the ones that were struggling, or the star players were doing good, and the supporting cast was struggling, if you remember. You know, we had great years from Monahan and Goudreau. This year, it seems like the goaltending's able to keep us in most games, but some of these supporting guys, like our third line, like Hamilton, they're doing well, but the stars are struggling.
Yeah, it seems like last year and this year have been polar opposites of one another.
Yeah, it sure does.
So, like last year, it was like half the team was having career years and the rest was like a bad AHL team. This year, the supporting cast guys like Backlund and Frolik have been awesome, and the stars have been just either okay or bad.
Well, and this is a better team on paper than last year's too, so you're expecting a lot more out of them.
Yeah. It happens, though, and especially when you have more parity in the NHL, like certain teams that were terrible, like two of the teams that we faced this week, the Oilers and the Leafs, they were legitimately terrible last year. Now they're good. So that, you know, there's just not a huge amount of mediocrity in the NHL right now, and it doesn't take much for a team that has some holes in it to just fall on their face and tumble down the standings.
And to be fair, that's not just Calgary. I mean, we're seeing, you know, the Blues tumbling. We're seeing the Lightning tumbling. I mean, even a team like Colorado's really tumbled. Calgary's tumbled. I think that the league's at such parity right now, and we've seen this over the last couple of years, that if you don't go hard every game, you're going to fall, and you're going to fall hard now.
Yeah, and like the Flames, they fought so hard to get back into things, and they just have a bad couple weeks, and now, in like according to points per game percentage, the Flames are one of the bottom 10 teams. They've just played more than everybody else. That's why they're still hovering in a playoff spot. But it won't take them, like right now, according to the point percentage, they're actually tied for 25th in the NHL. And the only two teams that are truly out of it are Arizona and Colorado. Everybody else is that's behind or tied with the Flames are very close, within only a couple of points of Calgary. So if this struggling continues for very long, the Flames could end up finding themselves with the third worst record in the NHL if things don't sort themselves out and quickly.
And we'll talk more about that as we get closer to the trade deadline. But I think that if you take a look, Calgary's going to have to decide fairly quickly if they're in this or out of this, so they can either buy or sell.
And I think right now, if you look at the points per game percentage, seven teams in each conference pretty much are at like 1.1 per game as their point percentage. And so that just leaves only one spot in either conference for all the rest of the teams to vie for. And Calgary, unless they can pick up their game, where like they played 50 games, like they would need to have four more points to be at that threshold, and it won't take much if they start sliding. So, and I think at this rate, with there only realistically being one spot open, I think that you have to go with the pragmatic view of just selling, regardless if the Flames are still holding on to that spot or not.
I think that our best bet is to sell at this point. And I think that if you sell and you still make it into the playoffs, great. But as we've talked about, there's no need to be in the playoffs this year. So if you can make it and have a bit of a run, fine. But I think that long term, there's assets that need to be sold. And we're going to do better for the future of this franchise if we sell.
Yeah. And it is disappointing. And I think this team unfairly had the expectations of playoffs, like after their season 2 years ago. And they just weren't ready. And like they only had one bad season and then they made the playoffs. And like that raised everybody's expectations. Well, you just have to look at the Edmonton Oilers and realize that sometimes it takes 5, 6, 7, 8, 10 years to fully get through a rebuild. And while Calgary is not anywhere near as bad as Edmonton was at any point in their rebuilding, early rebuilding process, they still have pieces that they need, and sometimes having a terrible season is the outcome of that.
And talking about, you know, the rebuild there, I think that the one thing that we can take away positively is the rebuild is going well. We're not going to do it the Oilers and rebuild a rebuild.
No.
Like, it's going to take a couple years, but I'm confident that if you look around at the roster they're putting together, you look around at guys like Tkachuk in the development there, Bennett in the development there, this team is going to be a contender in 2-3 years.
Yeah, and like you look at Monahan, and I know everybody's been freaking out about how Monahan's not had a great year, but points-wise, he's right there. He had 30 points now. 2 years ago, he had 31 points at the same point, and he had 33 last year. So it's all in that same proximity with one another. The team just seems to be lacking certain things, and each of those things is easily acquirable. It's just,
it's a matter of how much you want to pay to address it now versus acquiring it over a couple of years.
Thing. Like, we're not, we have too many things that we need right now where, like, you could gut the farm system and fix all of it, but you would be gutting everything on the farm system, and that doesn't make any rational sense.
No, that's your win now approach.
Yeah, like if we are like already been to the conference finals a couple of times and are making the push for a cup, then sure. But we're not there yet, so realistically, the Flames just need to ride out this season and figure things out at the draft and free agency and try to address the handful of openings that the team has.
Yeah, I think we're getting down to this point in the season where we start to bring up young guys and see what we got there and kind of, I don't want to say write this one off, but just kind of look at this one as prep for next year.
Yeah, and there's nothing wrong with that. Like, yeah, like last season sucked, watching it throughout the entire season. But at the end of the day, we got Matthew Tkachuk, who's pretty much been our best player consistently this year. And he's going to be a real thorn in everybody's side for the entire time that he's a Calgary Flame. Well, if the Flames suck, and say they're picking fourth or something, they're going to likely draft a guy like Owen Tippett, who's a right winger, who's a sniper, and is basically the what the Flames have been lacking organizationally. So, yeah, like if the Flames like really do terribly and end up in that position, well, you're going to get somebody that's of a similar caliber as Tkachuk or Bennett or Monahan in that same range. Well, that doesn't hurt at all, like for next season or the season after that. Yeah, it sucks right now, but short-term pain, you're getting something better game. And that might be the difference between the Flames just being a conference final team and a Stanley Cup team.
And people forget, too, and I always like to remind people of this. You look at the teams that people always say the Flames need to be more like, the Chicago Blackhawks, the Pittsburgh Penguins. These are teams that went through the same thing we did. I mean, after the lockout, the Penguins won the draft lottery and got Sidney Crosby. They were not a good team at the time.
Oh, no. Like, they picked first overall in 2003 to get Marc-Andre Fleury. They picked fifth overall to get Ryan Whitney. They picked second overall to get Malkin. They picked third overall to get second or third overall to get Jordan Staal. So, like, they were terrible for a long time.
Yeah, and the Hawks were similar.
Even Los Angeles, like, they locked out because of some question about Kopitar, because hockey from Slovenia, that's the only reason why he fell to 10th that year. I think he probably would have went first or second if he was from Canada. And then they sucked in 2008 and got Doughty. And, you know, they were terrible from, like, 2002 through till about 2010. And Chicago, of course, was terrible as well. So rebuilding is not a linear process. Like, you don't just go, oh, we sucked for 2 years and now we're going to win the cup. It's not like that.
Well, let's look at what the week that was for the Flames here, Matt. See if we can maybe pinpoint where they went wrong or what went wrong for them. They started off the week on a pretty good note, I thought. They took on the Florida Panthers in their first game of the week, and this was quite exciting. Michael Backlund scored twice in 13 seconds. Chris Versteeg, Mark Giordano, and Sean Monahan also got on the board in a 5-2 win over the Panthers. I was at this one, and as a fan, it was exciting. I mean, we haven't seen a really good Flames effort like this in a long time, I thought. And as much as the Flames didn't play great, you could tell that they were really feeding off of the energy.
Well, and you also have to figure the quality of their opponent. Like, Florida is a decent team, but when you're missing Barkov, Bukestad, and Huberdeau.
Yeah. And that's what it looked like. It looked like a decent team.
Yeah. Like, if you take Monahan, Gaudreau, and Tkachuk off the team, Flames are going to be hard pressed to do much of anything.
For sure.
So,
and, I mean, they have Luongo as a goalie, but Luongo, I thought, showed his age here. He just wasn't moving as quickly as he has when we've seen him here in a Canucks jersey.
Yeah, he's still a decent goalie, but it's not the same thing. And, like, we all remember when Cujo played here. Like, he was at the end of his career. It's much the same thing. Decent, but not the same.
So I think that this was probably the only highlight of the week, if I'm looking back at it. The Versteeg was a great goal. I was glad to see Backlund get two very quick. I was really hoping he'd get a third, but he didn't. And it was kind of interesting that, you know, the majority of the Flames scoring, I thought, came in the second period. Because usually when we see Flames scoring, it's either early or late when we see them kind of going on a run. So I thought it was interesting they put together three of them in the second frame.
Yeah.
The next game of the week after Florida, we had a visit from the Nashville Predators. And the Predators, to me, are sort of a team that have been hot and cold this year. And this wasn't a bad effort. Ryan Ellis had two goals and made 32 saves, and their goalie made 32 saves. The Predators held on for a 4-3 victory. I thought the Flames played okay, but they really didn't show me anything of interest until the last 5 minutes.
Yeah, it was just like they were going through the motions. And you see that in the other two games that they played in the week. It's just they were there. Like, it wasn't like they were driving the play at all. They were just okay. Not bad, not great, just there.
I felt like they were able to challenge Nashville with, you know, when Nashville had kind of upped the pace, so had the Flames. But, they weren't driving the play. They weren't trying to do anything creative. They were just kind of, I thought, playing a very, not even a very defensive game, but just a very lackadaisical game. They weren't trying to win a lot of the puck battles, and it was just a very weird game to watch.
Yeah, the team seems to be a little on the tired side for some reason. Like, it just seems that, like, all of their efforts lately have been just, like, even extending back to all the way back to the first Vancouver game on the 6th. Like, there just seems to be something off in the team.
Yeah.
Like, none of the efforts since then have been the team that we saw through the end of November and early December.
Yeah, they're obviously in a funk, and I guess the question becomes, how do you get them out of that funk? And one of our fans on Twitter, Ryan Swanson, at 76 Swanson, if you want to follow him. He asked us, Matt, this week, do you think that the team's in sort of an all-star break checkout? And I think with the all-star break and then the week off coming, it wouldn't surprise me if this team just needs, because they have that bye week coming as well shortly after, it wouldn't surprise me if this team just needs some rest. They've played a lot of games.
Yeah.
And we usually see that about this time, not just the Flames, but we usually see teams that just need some rest about now.
Yeah. Well, that could very well be, and we'll see how they respond. I just know that the next handful of games, other than the game against New Jersey on February 3rd, the next six games are all against pretty much top 10 teams between Montreal, Ottawa, Minnesota, the Rangers, and the Penguins. So the Flames are going to have to fight through some high-end teams over the next couple weeks, even if they aren't feeling up to snuff.
Well, and as we'll talk about the next two games, sometimes they can't even get through the lower end teams. So we have the game on the 21st this weekend where Calgary played Edmonton, and I was really looking forward to this one. I got to go to the game. I was covering it for the show, and we were, I don't know, I was going into this one thinking, okay, the Oilers have got three. The Flames are going to fire back. It's in our barn. We got to do something. And I don't think that you could put together a worse 6 minutes than the Flames had at the beginning.
Yeah.
Like this, this whole game, I think, got away from them mentally in that first 6 minutes. There's three goals. That's the quickest I think I've ever seen a goalie swapped.
And no, I think San Jose playoff game where Sarich nailed Marlowe, I think that one was a little quicker, but that's the only other one that jumps to mind where the goalie was yanked after allowing three very quickly.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah, that's a good
one. But you're going back like nearly a decade anything.
I'm kind of vaguely remembering that game, but yeah, that was a quick one. And you know what hurt even more is that Laurent Brossoit was the winning goaltender. He's a former Flames prospect who I believe we traded for Laddie Schmid.
Yeah.
So we'll trade him back now.
Well, at the time, it was a good trade. The Flames had tons of goalie depth and still do. It's just unfortunate that for Calgary that he's turned out to be an NHL goaltender. I don't think he was that great in the game, but he's an NHL goaltender, at least.
He could be, yeah. I mean, he didn't really get a lot of good test either, so I think it's hard to say if he really looked good or not.
Yeah.
But interesting, talking to Glenn Gulletson after the game and talking about those first three goals, I mean, he kind of said, you know what, the first one, we blew our coverage. And if you look back, he's right. The second one was actually a pretty good goal for the Oilers. And Gulletson said the third goal, he has no idea what our defense were doing.
Just yeah, that's about it.
No idea where they were, no idea what they were doing, what they were trying to accomplish. So, you know, and he was asked after the game, you know, where did this get away from the team mentally? We know where it got away on the scoreboard. And just, he was asked that, and a few of the players were asked that, and just nobody really had an answer for that. It was just, you know, we've got to play harder and faster. And I don't want to say there's no accountability, but at some point it's like, you know what, we have to just take this internally, and the players have to figure things out, because the loss like this to the Oilers, frankly, I'm embarrassed.
Yeah, and it was embarrassing. And I'm actually, the thing that I was looking forward to tonight watching the Toronto game was to see how they responded. And only one player, I think, had a good game for the Flames, and that was Sam Bennett. Everybody else looked terrible on the ice, and they lost 4-0. And yeah, it's not the type of response I would have expected from a team that was just freshly embarrassed on their own barn.
Yeah, well, let's move on to that game then, because I don't think there's much else we want to talk about with the Oilers game. Maple Leafs, you're right. I thought, okay, the Flames are going to have the Oilers game. They've got some time off. They had Sunday off, you know, the travel day. And I thought this team is going to come back and want to prove something. And I was expecting a barn burner in Toronto because of that. I thought these Flames are going to be on the warpath. And they showed up for almost the same game as we've seen them play since Nashville. Like, they were sort of there. I thought the first period, both teams played okay.
Yeah.
In Toronto. I thought that it was a good game. There's a lot of offensive chances. But Calgary couldn't hit the net in Toronto. Like, every good Flames chance missed the net.
Yeah. And it's not the effort I think anybody was expecting from Calgary, and as soon as Marner scored that first goal, it seemed like all the energy left the building for Calgary, and it's like, okay, we gave up the goal, we're done, thanks, see ya, on to Montreal now.
I kind of thought after the Marner goal we could get it back. The Flames had some power play time there, and I thought, okay, this is the time to get it. And after the Kadri goal, I felt less confident, and then the shorthanded Hyman goal, I knew that they were done.
Yeah, pack it in, go on. Yeah.
But, you know, again, it's like this, I don't know if this team just needs a break or what's going on, but this has just been, it's almost been an embarrassing week for this team of hockey. Like, these are teams you need to be beating if you plan to do anything.
Yeah. And if we had time off at all, I think they might have earned themselves a bag skate. But unfortunately, with a game tomorrow and then another one on Thursday, you can't do that.
You can bag skate them after they're done in Ottawa.
Probably will.
The day
especially
after.
Especially if they're playing terribly in both the next two games. Then I think you're going to have some long talks over the break.
And I'm worried about tomorrow night because Montreal is a team that I think if we can't beat Toronto, Montreal could manhandle us.
Oh, yeah. I'm expecting something along the lines of what we saw in Toronto or Edmonton. Like, especially if they play Carey Price against us. Although I'm kind of expecting Montoya to start that game.
I think looking at how the Flames have played over last week, we're starting to get into backup goalie territory. And we've talked about that in the past, where you almost say, okay, teams are going to underestimate us and play their backups. Now is the time to start winning, and it never happens either.
No. Like, Nashville played their backup, and Edmonton did too, and couldn't beat them at all. So, yeah, it's just, it is what it is, and that's the unfortunate thing. Like, you'd want to do something like a trade or something to fix the team, but unfortunately, the cost is going to be so exorbitant.
Well, I think our team looks so bad right now that nobody's going to want our pieces.
No,
and the pieces they do want, we don't want to give up.
Yeah, so it's one of those situations where you're pretty much stuck and you just have to wait, and, you know, if it comes to selling off pieces at the deadline, so be it. And
well, we talked earlier about, you know, the Flames being in a rebuild, and I think that this year is important too because there's a lot of money coming off the books for the Flames this year. If you look at the money coming off, they have $950,000 for Versteeg. They have $5,250,000 for Weidman. They've got almost $3 million for England. They got both the goalies. They have Schmid coming off. So this is going to be a year that if they need to, they can go shopping.
Oh, yeah. And, like, realistically, if the Flames get a, say they luck out and get Tippett, I'm just going to make things simple, and you can pencil him in as one of the right wingers, then you can go and spend, say, like, Weidman's contract on a defenseman of some kind, like, say, Carl Alsner, whatever, and, say, England's money on a forward of some kind to replace Versteeg, and you're pretty much good to go there. And, like, I don't see Chad Johnson getting more than what Elliott has if they decide to re-sign him, and I think you might just end up going with one of the younger goalies and just running with that instead.
No, I think you're right. And again, I think if we look at, you know, next year still, which I do, is, you know, we might make the playoffs, but looking at where we're at right now, realistically, I think we need at least 2 years. I think that you can put some money in and into some big names. They're going to be here for a while, but you can also start to develop, you know, some younger guys.
Yeah. Well, you got to figure Jankowski's going to be ready next year. Shinkarik might be ready. Even Mangiapane might be ready. So,
well, Matt, let's break this team down over the next couple weeks and really look at who might fit in where and into whose slot. And if you're good with it, why don't we start on the blue line?
Sure.
So this week we'll talk about the blue line. If you look at it, we have two, possibly three defensemen who are out of here. I think that there's no question Weidman's out of here. Would you agree?
Oh, for sure, yeah.
What about England?
I wouldn't mind him coming back, but I think that he'd rather go to Vegas just because that's where he lives.
Well, that's it. I think that he will, I think that he'll definitely end up in Vegas just because he's from there and he lives there.
Yeah, and, like, it's one of those situations where if he comes back, great. If he doesn't, okay. Like, he's a good player. I think he's been worth his contract, but, yeah. You know, he is 34, I think, so if you even just replace him with some other player that's slightly younger, that might be a better idea.
And then the third guy that I could see maybe not coming back would be Jerky Okipaka. I think he's just looked okay, but I think that if we're looking, again, at a rebuilding team, you may give that slot to somebody like a Kulak or somebody from the farm.
Yeah, and that's one of those players that could be involved in a trade or something. Because he does have some value, but not a huge amount.
So let's just for the sake of argument, let's run with the idea that three defensemen are going to be out of here. You want to start bringing in young guys, but at the same time, you need the veteran help. And I've talked about this with the Oilers in the past, is you know, having that blind leading the blind is not what you want. A bunch of young guys trying to figure it out together. We have some good vets in Giordano, Brody, Hamilton. So, Matt, let me ask you this first. Do you think that, let's say there are three spots, do we have three guys we call from the AHL? Do we have three guys ready for those spots?
I think Brett Kulak could be ready for one of the spots. And, like, if you inserted him as the number six next year, I think that'd be fine. I don't see that being too much of a trouble either way. It would basically just be replacing Okipaka with somebody with slightly more upside. I think you could easily just slot Okipaka as the number seven as well, and that'd be fine too.
That could work.
I don't see that being any much of a problem. I'd leave one of the spots available for either Anderson or Shillington, and let them have that drag out battle between each other for one of those spots.
Yeah, I don't think you bring them both up. I don't want two young guys trying to develop like that. And I honestly think Shillington would win just because he has more pro experience. But I agree with you. I think one of those two is ready.
Yeah. And honestly, I think, like, if the Flames were going to be in, like, not really competitive mode next year, I think you could get away with having them both in. But if you want to be competitive, you can't do that. So, you know, I would probably just go with a veteran guy, a guy like a Trevor Daley or Carl Alsner or even a Cody Franson, just somebody that's a serviceable number four.
You know, and of those guys, if you look at them, I think, would you put Gio and Brody back together next year?
Yeah, for sure.
So that means that we have Hamilton needing a partner. I like Alsner and the idea of him being Hamilton's partner. I think with Hamilton picking it up this year, Alsner would be a good... He's still young, but he's a veteran guy. He's played for some really successful teams, and he has a history in Calgary.
Yeah, like, honestly, if you gave Weidman's money to Alsner, I'd be fine with that.
What about another option like Michael Stone, another former hitman? He's been a big minute eater for the Coyotes this year.
Yeah, that could work. I wouldn't, like, if that's who it was, I wouldn't be complaining. So, yeah, sure, why not?
A couple other guys that I picked out here and have been talked about as well. A guy that I've liked for a while, but I'm not sure he's quite the right fit, is Dmytro Kulikov. I think Kulikov's a good defenseman, but I'm not sure that he's making, what, 4. I'm just checking, 4.4 this year. I don't know I want to pay him that much.
Yeah. Another option that might be, like, especially if Shillington is the one that ends up winning the job, I think that getting his workout partner, Johnny Oduya, might fit as well.
Yeah, I don't know. I've never been a big Oduya fan.
No, he's just a solid
4-5
guy.
I think Oduya would be more of your 5-6 guy than a 4.
Yeah, I agree.
If you're going to bring him in, I think that I would want Oduya to be more of a, I don't know, your number 5 short term. But if I'm looking at bottom pairing guys, I mean, I'd rather take guys like Yannick Weber, Postma, Philip Larson, even Matt Tennyson, I think would be better than Oduya.
I can agree with you there. I'm just throwing out, like, there might be a connection there, so that's why that might make some sense. But yeah, it's kind of hard because you don't know what the intentions of each of the players are, and like whether they'd even want to come to Calgary or not. And overall, like there's plenty of options available, and there are plenty of decent players out there. It's just trying to find the right fit for the team, and I think a more veteran guy would be ideal. It's just trying to figure out who exactly that would be.
To me, Alzner would be my number one.
Same
If we're
here.
going to go out and break the bank, well, not break the bank, but offer a lucrative defensive contract for a number four.
Yeah.
I think after him, I'd probably go with Michael Stone, mostly because he's a right shot and we need some right shots. And I think he'd be thrilled to come to Calgary after being in Arizona for so long.
Yeah, I could see that.
My third pick, I think, would be Cody Franzen. Franzen's kind of jumped around from okay teams to okay teams. And he's one of these defensemen that I look at that he's okay at everything. He's not a huge offensive threat, but he can be good offensively. He's good defensively. He's kind of an all-around defenseman.
Yeah, he's basically like Dennis Wiedemann, more or less. Like it
And
just
he's
they
making
hit.
3.3 right now, and I don't think he'd be in line for a huge raise. I think you'd get Franzen for four or less.
Yeah, I think you'd probably get him for less than what he's making now.
So in that case, maybe you bring in someone like Alzner and try to bag Franzen.
Well, here's another name that I'm going to throw at you. Brian Campbell. He's 38, so like it'd only be a 1 year deal. But what do you think about the idea of somebody that's in that same mold as Giordano and Brody?
I just don't know what we get from. I guess it would depend who his partner is. If we're bringing in vets just to bring in vets, I don't like it at this point. Maybe if we're running for a cup, but with Giordano being kind of the elder statesman on the blue line, Brody being the heir apparent, and Hamilton the upcomer, I don't know that Campbell's the right partner for Hamilton.
Yeah.
He might be the right partner if you bring somebody like Shillington up, but I'm not sure we could convince him to be a 5-6 defenseman in Calgary.
Yeah. I agree. I'm just throwing that. That was the only under the radar name that I could think of that would make any sense.
Yeah, I think this is definitely a position the Flames can fill through acquisition on July 1. I don't think there's any need to go out and trade for a defenseman.
Again, that depends on acquisition costs, but usually defensemen cost more anyway, so yeah. I don't think that unless like a you get a Hamilton situation where somebody just falls in your lap, but then
Yeah.
you're not really going to complain either, so
No. And I mean, the biggest two defensemen, I didn't even list them because I think that the cost is going to be so astronomical. Shattenkirk, obviously good. I think that he's going to have tons of suitors, and I don't think we'd want to pay anywhere near what he's in line to make.
Yeah.
And Michael Delzato, I think, is going to have a lot of. I like Delzato, but I think that he's going to be too rich for us.
How's he doing anyway? I haven't heard about him for a while.
Well, Delzato's in Philly, and we don't get a lot of Philly news here.
Yeah, he's only got 10 points in 30 games. That's not really that good.
If
So.
he was available, I think I'd put Delzato before Alzner, but I don't know. I think that he's
Yeah,
not having a great year, but Delzato's had some good years with the Rangers, and I think those might come back.
Yeah. He might be an interesting buy low candidate. Like, if you can't get Alzner, getting Delzato might be a good runner up.
Yeah, the poor man's version.
Yeah.
And then another guy I would look at on the 5-6 would be Dmitry Orlov, out of Washington. He's
Yeah,
25.
he's decent.
He's making 2.5 this year. He's not a great defenseman, but again, I think as sort of a 25-year-old to pair up with whoever makes it from the farm, I think that could be a good pairing.
Yeah.
And Orlov's the kind of guy that if we have an injury, I could see him, as a not terrible fill-in.
Yeah, and plus he hits like a truck, so that helps too.
Yeah, and we're going to lose some of that if we lose England, some of that
Yeah.
truculence on the back end. The next question I wanted to ask you, should we just be going for the best available defenseman, or should we be looking for the shot balance pairings, the, left and right and making sure we have a bit of both? Because Gullitsen has shown that he doesn't always go with those shot balance pairings. We've seen, we've seen Brody play left, we've seen Brody play right. So what would you be doing? Would you be making sure we've always got a left and a right together, or just trying to stack the best defenseman we can find?
Well, I think you just keep Brody on the right side, even though he's a left shot, and because he's more comfortable there, and he hasn't looked comfortable all season being on the left side, and he's been playing terribly, which, you know, if it was me, that experiment would have been ended a long time ago, probably at the beginning of November, but, you know, it is what it is. And, honestly, I think things like that are overblown. Like, you must have a right shot on the right wing. Well, if you've got a good guy that can snipe the puck and he's a left shot, why not try him on the right side? I read this article not that long ago about James Neal, and he was tried on the right side after he got acquired by the Penguins, and that's when he turned into a really good player because his stick was closer to the middle of the ice, so he was able to better snipe the puck. So it's one of those situations where, yeah, ideally you'd like to have one thing, but it's not it shouldn't necessarily be the most important thing. Talent is the most important thing.
I agree. So based on what we've talked about, and I've kind of mapped out here what our defensive pairings might look like next year. So I think number one, you're right, we got to end this experiment and put Joe Brody back together. They seem to be, the sum of the parts seem to be better than the two individual pieces there. When they play together, they look great. When they're separate, they look okay. Let's assume Alzner comes in. You put Alzner with Hamilton?
Yeah, sure, why not?
And that gives us, let's say, Shillington, because I think that my biggest issue with Anderson is he's got some conditioning issues. And I don't know they get figured out for next year. But let's pencil in Shillington. You put him with somebody unknown, whoever we can pick up cheap, I think. And Kulak.
Kulak or Joki Paakka, one or the other.
Yeah, I think that Kulak or Joki Paakka would probably start as seven. I still think they'd probably want to get somebody a little more veteran to play with a guy like Shillington, because I think Shillington, Kulak, there's just too much youth there on one pairing. I don't think that they both last. I think it'll either be Joki Paakka or Kulak.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't be opposed to moving Kulak if we can get some for him. Like, I'm not sold that it has to be him next year.
I agree. Well, yeah, there's not, if you can get something viable for him. But you could pretty much say that about almost everybody in the organization. If you get something viable and it makes sense, then sure.
Yeah, no, of course. But I guess I'm just kind of looking at it that, you know what, he's a guy who I think we have two or three like him, or could have two or three like him. And 5-6 defensemen, especially veteran ones, are very plentiful. So I think that, you know, of course, if you get some for anybody, you're going to do it. But I think that with him, you know, I mean, you've mentioned in the past how you thought Kulak, Kalkin were almost the same guy a lot of times. I think Kalkin's fallen behind in the depth chart, but there's other guys you could put in there. Joki Paakka being one of them.
I agree.
So that's our look ahead at the blue line of this team. We'll look at the forwards next week and then the goaltenders following that and see what we think and who might be making the team next year. Outside of the blue line, though, there's been a lot of talk this week, as always happens, Matt, when there's troubled waters, and it's been around the hockey ops and the coach and the GM and that sort of thing. We've talked a lot about changing coaches and Gullitson's head being called for and Cameron's head being called for, and if we think that that's, you know, something that we would go for. I didn't think so earlier in the season, but now there's a new wrinkle in there with the Gullitson thing in that it looks like Claude Julien may be available. And I guess my first question to you, without even looking at maybe firing Gullitson, just a comparison, who do you think is the better coach, Julien or Gullitson?
Honestly, I'm not that big of a fan of either. And, like, I if you had to say one or the other, I'd probably go with Claude Julien, but I don't know. I've never really liked how he coaches wherever he's been. There just always seems to be something off with how they do things. And, like, yeah, he would make more sense, especially with this organization, than I think Gullitson does. But would I go to the extent of firing Gullitson to bring Julien in? I don't think that's a big enough upgrade.
No, I mean, if you look at them on paper, Julien has the better record. But, I mean, you know, Gullitson in his first year as a head coach. And I bet if we looked at their first years, Julian probably wasn't much different than what Gullitson's record will be.
Well, Gullitson coached with Dallas before. Oh, that's true.
Yeah, that's right. I forgot. I keep thinking he's just Vancouver's assistant.
Yeah.
But yeah, he's, I don't know. I think that Julian is an interesting option, but I think you nailed the biggest thing there is we don't want to change coaches again. We don't want to be like Edmonton where every year we're changing coaches because then nobody wants to come coach there. Nobody wants to play there. And I think that Julian's an interesting option, but I don't think you make that change after this season, nor mid-season.
No. And realistically, there's only maybe five coaches in the NHL that would be a big enough upgrade where you'd actually pull the trigger. And one may actually come available, and that's Dave Tippett, of all people, which I know everybody hates how defensively the Coyotes play and how it can be a boring game, but defense wins championships. And like, he took that rather mediocre Coyotes team to the conference finals 1 year. So I don't know.
To me, I think you've got to give Gullitson at least another year. And it brings up the question that we've asked a number of times is, can we blame hockey ops in this town anymore? I mean, we've switched out the GM, we've switched out the coaches. Is it a coaching problem? Is it a GM problem? Or is this something that has to be fixed on the ice?
Well, part of the problem is that the Flames have like $15 million tied up in contracts where if you were swap them out with young players from the Stockton, you wouldn't even notice much of a difference.
I agree.
Like, if you say you replace Dennis Wideman with Oliver Shillington, would you really notice that much of a difference?
You might notice an improvement.
Probably. At this rate, you probably would. And, like, if you replace Boma with Hathaway, would you notice a difference? It'd probably be an improvement. So, and I can keep going through the other $15 million in contracts. Like, if you replace Stajan with Jankowski, yeah, you'd probably see a little step back, but not a huge amount. So...
No, and that's kind of what I mean when I'm saying that is I don't think that this – I think that if we gave this same roster to Claude Julien, you're not going to see much difference in results. I think if you give this same roster to Dave Tippett, you're not going to see much in results. So I think
– No, like maybe – like the difference might be 3 or 4 points, maybe 5.
Yeah, but you're not going to go from being, you know, a team that's barely holding on to a wild card spot to being a team that is, you know
– vying for the division.
Vying for the division or vying for the Western Conference.
No.
So I don't think that that's necessarily the option at this point. I think definitely down the road, I don't think that Gullitson is our guy when we become a conference final team. I think he's very much a development coach. He's right for now. But I think
like once the team's actually there, you're going to get good coaches that are like, I want to coach that team because they're on the verge of doing
exactly.
something.
They'll be lining up for it. So I don't know. I think that if we take a look, I think you're going to find that Gullitson's the guy for now. They don't want to make that change. And it's not going to do us much better. I think we really need to focus, like you said, moving out the bad money, bringing in the young guys, and just keeping the pace. And these are all growing pains of a rebuild.
Yeah. Realistically, the Flames have $55 million in contracts that are producing at the level that they should. So...
I mean,
we're kind of hogtied where other teams are not, and that's part of the unfortunate thing. Like, we have three defensemen that are basically number sixes on the team.
And well, that's it. I mean, if
we don't have a viable number four, we don't have a viable number five. So,
We're getting the Monahan kind of production from last year, the Giordano production from last year from both those guys, if we were getting the Goudreau production, the Brody production from last year, Hamilton's production from this year, Tkachuk from this year. You know, like, if we were to kind of take the best of last year and the best of this year, I think we'd be in a very different position.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
And I don't think it's a coaching or motivation thing.
No, and you also got to remember the Flames had Hudler and Colborne, who were, while overrated in some respects, they were viable top nine forwards, and they replaced them with, I guess, Versteeg and or Brouwer and Chiasson. Well, you're basically taking two viable top line forwards and replacing them with fourth liners. Well, yeah, you're going to see a little bit of a problem there. So, and that affects the line mates too. And you see that, like Gaudreau, he struggles because the other teams don't even have to pay attention to Chiasson. They just focus in on him in the center, and there goes the scoring chances. So, because even when Chiasson is found for a good scoring chance, he either misses the net or he shoots it right into the logo.
Based on some of the guys that were available when Calgary did their coaching search, I believe Gullitzson was the guy they wanted. I don't think it's like we got the second choice or third choice. I mean,
No, I
there were
agree.
some viable NHL coaches out there, and if we wanted a Claude Julien, we would have got somebody of that caliber. I mean, Boudreau was available, and a few other guys were available. I think this is the guy they want, and because of that, they're going to ride him for at least another year.
Yeah, I think as long as the general manager is here, he will be here.
Well, let's talk about that. That's interesting too. So the Calgary Flames are the only team right now, it looks like, with a GM whose deal is expiring. He's in the last year of his deal, and they haven't re-signed him. And usually with management types, they're re-signed early. They're re-signed, you know, even before the players. It's an easy thing to do. Say, come on back. This is kind of puzzling to me. Treliving, his deal's up July 1st, and management, apparently according to Elliot Friedman and what he's been saying, he thinks that the Flames are willing to go to July 1st, let the deal expire, and then renegotiate. And to me, that's a fool's move. I don't know about you, Matt. I think that Treliving is the best GM we've had in a long time.
Well, yeah, I agree. It's, but you're not in charge, and we don't know what's going on behind the scenes, whether he wants to be back or if there's some personality conflicts or whatever. We don't know, and it's impossible to tell.
That's true. But I mean, based on what we do know and
But
looking
like,
at the hockey resume.
yeah, based on the hockey resume, yeah, he should be back, but
I don't think that you're going to see another team lining up at the door to snap up Treliving.
I would assume that he'd get snapped up to be like an EGM of some sort somewhere.
And he's already done that.
Yeah, but you gotta figure that, like, say like Don Mahloney, he came over from Arizona after he was let go to be our AGM. So I could see something along those lines.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't think that you leave. I don't think that you would not sign a contract if Calgary offers it to you to take a deal like that. I think that's a contingency plan. It's the I
Yeah.
can't get a deal. Like, I think if Calgary puts a deal in front of you, you take it. You want to be a GM.
Oh, for sure, but
I just think it's odd
yeah.
that, you know, the Flames wouldn't have at least brought him in for one more year. And I guess if you don't want to bring him back, buy him out in the summer and, you know, let Burke or whoever run the team for the year. It just seems kind
Yeah.
of weird to
Well,
be
like
this.
it, yeah. Like I'm kind of if Treliving isn't back, I'm kind of expecting Don Mahloney to be our new general manager. So we'll see.
You don't think Berkey steps back in?
No, I think if anybody, it would be him. So, and that wouldn't be the worst thing in the world. So, we'll see. Like,
I think you're right. And I mean, for those that don't know, Don Mahloney was the GM in Phoenix where Brad Treliving honed his craft. This was essentially the guy that Treliving learned from, and he brought in, you know, his old boss as one of the underlings. And now, yeah, I think that we have this guy on the payroll who's a bona fide NHL GM, and he's probably looked at as the number two.
yeah. So it's one of those situations, like, ideally Treliving would be back, but we don't know what's going on behind the scenes. So you have to weigh that. And if he's not back, then they do have somebody in-house that is able to do the job. And if not, then they can find somebody else. So we'll see.
Yeah,
It's one of
there's
those things that.
not a lot of proven NHL GMs out there, but Maloney's, I guess, as good as any.
Yeah.
I just
Like,
want to see Treliving back.
yeah, I agree, but we'll see. Like, that's something that'll be a story that we'll be covering all the way through the draft or until a contract is signed.
I
So,
guess for me, I just feel like Calgary's been handicapping too many GMs. Like, we bring Feaster in to do the rebuild, and we get rid of him. I thought he was unfairly fired before he could execute his plan. I think that Treliving has a plan, and if they don't bring him back, they're kneecapping him too, and he doesn't get to finish his plan. I think at some point you need to bring a guy in and say, these guys are being brought in as GMs to rebuild the team. Let's let them at least finish their, you know, 4 or 5 year plan, whatever it is.
I agree.
You can't just keep switching guys and saying, well, you now you gotta fix this guy's plan and then implement your own and try to move pieces out. And it's, I don't know. I think that you got to let Treliving see this one through. So I'm hoping it'll get done sooner rather than later. One last question that I wanted to ask you, and this again comes from our Twitter feed. This is from Ryan Swanson again, at 76 Swanson. He wants to know our thoughts on the Flames packaging something up to send to the New York Islanders in exchange for Strom, Ryan Strom. Matt, why don't you take this one first?
I don't know. Like, usually when you have players like that, like, yeah, he was drafted high, but he just had the one good season in 2014-2015, and he's been kind of marginal since then.
2014-2015, he got 50 points. 2015-2016, he had 28 points. Last year, he played and split that year with Bridgeport, and this year he's got 14 points in 42 games.
At this rate, like, if he was willing to be a right winger, then sure, I guess. But I wouldn't be willing to give up much more than a third round pick and a minor prospect, like even like a guy like Poirier. Usually, like, if you're a top 10 pick and like you haven't figured it out by now, like, you're pretty much like, he is 23, and usually, like, you've got everything up, you know, you're going by now if you're going to go. So the fact that he's still struggling, if the price was right, sure, but...
See, and I think that becomes the key there, too, is if we look traditionally at trades that have been made out of the Islanders, Garth Snow tends to overvalue his assets, I think.
Yeah, oh, for sure.
You know, and I think the Islanders tend to overvalue what they have, and I don't think we would get Strom at a reasonable price. And right now, I don't see Strom as an upgrade over really anything we've got. I mean, if you wanted to change one piece for one piece, maybe, but I don't see what they would want of ours. There would just be sort of a, you know, center for center type deal.
Yeah.
Like if you could do a staging for Strom, sure, I'll do it, but they're not going to want to do that.
No. Or, like, if you're planning on using him as a right winger, like a chase on plus a draft pick for Strom, sure, but again, why are they going to want your player anyway? So,
and I mean, Strom is a centerman, and like you said, you could use him on the wing, but we also don't know what he looks like on the wing. I mean, you know, I would rather bring in a guy and spend that acquisition cost on a right winger.
So would I.
So, you know, Strom's a good player, don't get me wrong, I like watching him play, but I just don't know. Yeah.
Actually really am not much of a fan of any of the Strom brothers. No? I think they're kind of overrated, like even the one with Arizona, Dylan, I think. There's just something about them that just they don't seem to be.
I think you're right, they're often overrated, but I think if you put Strom into a bottom six forward role, he wouldn't be bad.
Yeah.
I would rather, if we're going to make a run at Strom, he's got 2 years left in his deal this year and next year, wait until he's a free agent and pick him up for nothing. I just don't want to give anything up. I think that we can replace that position either through the farm or UFA this year and not give something up. I just don't see the point of...
Yeah.
We're not going to get him for a rental, and I don't see the point of giving up an asset to bring him in.
Yeah, like if it's a third-round pick, then sure, because this draft is kind of weak after a certain point. But again, they're not going to likely want that. They're going to likely want a second round pick and a decent prospect. And it's like, yeah, let somebody else, like, let Arizona try and get that off them or something.
Yeah, I could honestly see them trying to get Backlund off of us.
Yeah, and like at that rate, no, thank you. So, like, give me somebody actually good instead.
Yeah.
If you're going to trade Backlund, give me something good.
Yeah, I think Strom could fit here. I just don't want to pay the acquisition cost.
No.
Well, Matt, another interesting note for the week, and I just found this out. I was browsing around the AHL site this past weekend, and I always wonder who's leading the AHL in goals and points and assists, and this is a name I never thought I'd hear from again. Kenny Agostino, former Flames prospect, drafted by the Penguins and traded here in the Jerome Iginla deal, is leading the AHL in points right now. He has 55 points in 44 games, 17 goals, 38 assists. And I guess all I can say is good for you, Agostino.
Yeah, and hopefully he can figure a way to translate that into the NHL. And make something of himself other than just being a quadruple A player, to use a baseball term. Somebody who's too good for the minors but not quite good enough for the NHL.
You become the 13th
like
forward
Street
somewhere.
Or that type of guy. Or yeah, David Van Der Gulick.
One of these guys who racks up a lot of miles going up and down. So, interesting note there. You know, good for Agostino. Too bad it's the year after we get rid of him.
Sometimes that goes hand in hand.
Yeah, and that's it. You're going to win some and you're going to lose some. And we've had players come in that we didn't expect to do well, and we've lost players that did well. So, you know, it happens. But I don't think that the Flames are any worse off for losing Agostino, and I think this might just be a fluky year too. But we'll see what happens as we go forward with him. So, Matt, should we move on to the predictions, or do you have anything else you want to chat about?
That's all.
So this is going to be a short week for the Calgary Flames. We have the NHL All-Star break coming up, so there's a big chunk of the schedule that's not going to be used over the next week. We saw the Calgary Flames tonight play the Toronto Maple Leafs. Tomorrow night they have a back-to-back in Montreal where they'll take on the Montreal Canadiens. And then on the 26th they are in Ottawa taking on the Ottawa Senators. And that's the last game they play until February 1st, so they'll have about 5 days off there. So, Matt, last week neither of us did great. Last week I thought we'd get 6 points beating Florida, Toronto, and Edmonton. You thought we'd beat Florida and Toronto. We both underestimated Toronto, and the Flames only ended up with 2 points. This week is, I think, the easiest in terms of number of games played, one of the easiest weeks we've had since November. Last time we had two games in a week was November 7th. So what do you think? Montreal, Ottawa.
0 points.
You're going with the big goose egg this week?
Yep. I think it's going to take a while for them to figure things out. And with the game so close to the Toronto one, I just don't think they have time to do so.
I wouldn't be surprised if you're right. I'm going to go with the same. Actually, you know what? I'm going to go 1 point against Ottawa. I think we might be able to get
an OT game out of them.
We might be able
deal.
To get an OT game out of them. I think Montreal's going to run us over. I think we might be able to get something out of Ottawa. The real test for me right now is how do we reset after a 5-day break? And, I mean, with Minnesota looking at us on the other side of that break, you know, we need that rest. So,
yeah.
Closer to the East, hopefully we'll get some guys who are going to rest and recover. A lot of Flames from Ontario, so maybe they'll stay home with family or go off some hot destination. And luckily we don't have a lot of guys in the All-Star game this year. So we'll see if they rest and recover and come back on the first. They have 4 games, and then they have their bye week. So the good thing, I think, is there's a lot of time coming up for the Flames to rest. You know, essentially 2 of the next 3 weeks, they're off. And that can be good or can be bad, but I think right now it can't be any worse than it is right now.
I agree.
You know, I mean, can a week off hurt us any more than it is?
No.
So let's hope that it's not just a, you know, net zero and that we actually get some out of this week off. All right, Matt, well, you have a good week.
Yeah, and just one thing. Just want to give my condolences to Brian Burke on the death of his father. It's a tough thing to, at any point, to lose a parent. So
it
just
is.
Want to wish my condolences to him and his family.
For sure. And we will be back. We'll record over the All-Star break, and we will be back ready for the start of February and looking down the trade deadline barrel at that point. You have a great week. Enjoy the All-Star game, and we'll talk to you soon.
Fun times ahead. Take it easy, everybody. Thanks for listening.
This has been another Fireside Chat. Don't forget to subscribe to the show at firesidechat.ca. Follow us on Facebook at facebook.com/firesidechat. And to follow us on Twitter at Fireside Podcast. Catch our show on the podcast channel at thehockeywriters.com. Fireside Chat is licensed under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial Share-alike license. Hosted by Dan Stevenson and Matt Dubourg. Produced and edited by Peter Marino and Ryan Coetz.